Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokat. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to work on your hunger and drive you to Jersey Mike's Subs, where throughout their March month of giving, shops across Connecticut and the region are raising money for important charities, four of them right here in Connecticut. And they're gearing up to give 100% of the entire day's proceeds to those charities on their giving day, March 27th. Then we'll catch up with a dental expert and talk about serious concerns related to dental procedures, particularly for adolescents, and how they can avoid any lingering complications or issues because of the prescription painkillers they might receive after procedures like wisdom tooth extractions. Then, on the same subject, we'll close visiting with Ginger Katz, founder of the Courage to Speak Foundation. We're going to hear about the expansion of her Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis program and how you can bring it to a school or community organization near you. And we'll invite you to the organization's 15th annual Courage to Speak Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. That's coming up in Norwalk on April 9th. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokat, right after this reminder. How'd you like to experience one of the iconic artists of the 60s? A newly curated collection from artist and legend Peter Max's paintings will be on exhibit and available for acquisition in a presentation at Geary Gallery, Darien's premier fine art gallery. Previews of the exhibition begin on Sunday, April 6th, and there's a special uncrating event on Friday, April 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. There are also two very special gallery receptions planned for April 13th and April 14th. All artworks are on exhibition and available for acquisition, and all events are complimentary and open to the public. However, RSVPs are required. So if you would like to go, just call 866-900-6699 or learn more at GearyGallery.com. That's G-E-A-R-Y Gallery.com. Well, I remember the first time that I ever walked into a Jersey Mike's sandwich shop, and what was really cool for me was I had never seen a restaurant make the big sandwich like Jersey Mike's makes, like Jersey Mike's Subs makes. I mean, they you can get the little sandwich or you could get the medium sandwich, but for a really hungry person, or if you want to really extend your Jersey Mike's experience into dinner time, you get the big sandwich for lunch. But along with the big sandwich, when it comes to Jersey Mike's Subs, they got a big heart too. And maybe you haven't heard about it, and how could you not have yet been to a Jersey Mike's? If you haven't, or if you haven't been for a while, you definitely want to go, and you definitely want to go during March, because this March, Jersey Mike's Subs is helping folks eat and help local charities. More than 1,500 Jersey Mike's locations across the country are benefiting over 180 local charities. There's four right here in Connecticut. So when you eat Jersey Mike's in Connecticut, you can benefit Connecticut organizations. We're going to hear all about it because on the line with me is Chad Faulkner. He's the area director for New England for Jersey Mike's Subs. The reason we're on the line this morning is to talk about the giving and the philanthropic side of Jersey Mike's. So as we said, this is a nationwide thing. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. So Peter Cancro, and I'll touch on the history towards the end of the call, but Peter Cancro's mission from early on was we give to give. And the fact of the matter is any franchisee who comes on board today and signs up to open up their own shop, part of that mission is the month of March itself. So we circle it on our calendar. We look forward to it. Like you said, so we have 1,500 locations right now across the country who are joining forces. We're going to have over 200 local charities chosen. Last year, we raised over $6 million. So this year, our goal is to beat last year's last year's record-setting total. Here in Connecticut, we're fortunate enough we have 14 shops open as far south as Brantford, as north as Hartford County, stretching all the way out west and east and everything in between. So the four charities that we're raising money for is the American Heart Association, which we've had a great relationship over the past few years, Make-A-Wish, which obviously is nationally known, and we've had quite the partnership for over a decade with Take a Vet Fishing down in Brantford. Mark Ferns has done a phenomenal job for, I think they're going on 8 or 9 years now that they've been partnered together. And then we have the Glastonbury Education Foundation right here in Hartford itself in Glastonbury.
Great. So in the 9 years that the annual Month of Giving fundraising campaign has been tied to Jersey Mike's, have the amount of recipients in the state of Connecticut grown, or is there, at least in your experience, has there always been four?
No, so we've grown. Absolutely, yeah. So as we grow in development, obviously more charity partners will come on board. You know, we have 10 shops in development now over the next 12, 14 months or so. So those recipients obviously will grow with the choice of those franchisees. Mm. As for the charity itself, I don't know if I necessarily touched on it, but, you know, how it's designed is through the entire month of March, we'll raise as much money as possible on the store level through month-long fundraising campaigns. So if you pop into any of our Jersey Mike's right now, you'll have the option to donate $1, $3, or $5. And then as for the day of giving itself, that's always the last Wednesday of March, so this year it falls on the 27th. On that day, 100% of the day's sales will be donated across the nation.
Mm-hmm. And so this is going to air a week or so before the day of giving. So if people maybe for whatever reason can't make it on the 27th of March, essentially at any point when a Jersey Mike's is open near them, they can go in and help the effort. Can they actually at the register say, I want to donate $5 for the Heart Association versus the Take a Vet Fishing or what have you? Do they have a chance to designate their donations, or does it all go into a pool and then it just gets divvied up?
Gotcha. All right. So so each charity is linked by that franchisee or that group's choice. So there's a specific charity linked to every shop. So when you go in throughout the month, we do encourage you to go into Jersey Mike's if you can't get in there on the 27th. We do encourage you to go in there and, obviously get a sandwich and enjoy the experience, but also make a donation to that specific linked charity of that store.
So the stores perhaps in the Hartford area would be more predisposed to maybe support the Glastonbury Education Initiative because it is so local to them?
So the Glastonbury Education Foundation is linked to the Glastonbury shop. Beth and McRae Williams they're from the town, they're locals. They've got a direct impact with that school. They've worked with them time and time again. Mm-hmm. Whereas Manchester, right down the road, Ken Shankey, who recently opened in December, he's partnered with Make-A-Wish. He's trying to drive as much. They're hoping to create enough of a donation that they can fulfill a wish for a child.
Okay. And likewise with the Take a Vet Fishing Initiative, that is an initiative of a store down on the coast?
Absolutely, yeah. So Take a Vet has been partnered with Brantford from the beginning for 9 years. Mm. Mark has a great relationship with them there, and we've been very fortunate with the amount of money we've been able to raise for them.
Very good. And of course, the program through the location of our antennas and our broadcast paraphernalia, we cover all of or all of Long Island, the greater metro New York City, Westchester County, some areas in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. So this is definitely not limited to Connecticut. I'm sure you have franchises in other states. And so if folks are listening out there on Long Island or in New York, Westchester County, they can go to a Jersey Mike's near them, and ostensibly that Jersey Mike's would be tied to a charity that either may be known to them on a national level like the American Heart Association, or it could be tied to some niche charity right there in that shop's hometown.
No question. Yeah, absolutely. We encourage you to pop into your local Jersey Mike's. introduce yourself. Say, you know, obviously you can mention you heard us on the radio, which brought you in there. But we also, you know, John, this marketing and the fundraising stretches past March itself. So throughout the year, we encourage anyone who's looking to raise money for schools, charities, clubs, to stop into your local Jersey Mike's, speak to the owner or manager about, you know, partnering up where we can help you guys.
And is that where it starts? I mean, it's just, there's no big corporate vetting and application process. A charity could actually initiate their potential opportunity to be a Jersey Mike's Month of Giving or Day of Giving recipient right there at the neighborhood level?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where everything starts for us. That's where our marketing starts, on a grassroots level, fundraising and charities. And, you know, if everyone goes into their Jersey Mike's, you'll notice we have a community board where we showcase our involvement, obviously, through letters and thank you notes and whatnot. So, yeah, it all starts on the store level. And that's kind of who we are as a brand, John. That's, you know, we're still a single owner, you know, started in 56. He took over. Peter bought the shop in 74 at 17 years old. And what we've done along the way is it's as traditional as you can find.
Very good. Well, as you are learning more about the organizations that are benefiting from this Jersey Mike's sub month of giving and the Day of Giving on March 27th, Wednesday, when 100% of the proceeds that are taken in at every Jersey Mike's store here in Connecticut are going to one of these charities, tell us a little more, expand a little bit more on the charities and what has struck you about why they're so important to the owners who want to focus on them as the recipient of their giving here in March.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can only speak from my own personal experience. You know, when I started with the company 6 years ago, I was introduced to a brand I didn't know anything about. And over the years, obviously, as I've worked my way up and had the opportunity to operate my own shop, we ourselves raised money for Make-A-Wish back in New Jersey. And I remember going down to the Make-A-Wish Castle once everything was set and the dust had settled, you know, in mid-April, and watching the impact of what it had done for those children. And I know last year alone, in New Jersey, we were able to fulfill 6 different wishes for children. So, you know, you see it on that level, and it impacts you. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. And then we take it a step further. So, you know, employees that are coming on board, kids at 15, 16, 17 years old with working papers are exposed to who we are. And back to that whole motto of give to give, that's the whole reasoning behind it. And the impact we've made in these towns and in these schools, you know, if you stretch as far north as the North Shore, north of Boston, where we're linked up with the Frady's Foundation and Team Frady's, and, you know, last year we had a few different families come in from Make-A-Wish across our shops. It truly is remarkable. And, John, I'm sitting here in my brain trying to muster up the right words to describe it, and I don't think I have it.
What do you hear about the Take a Vet Fishing initiative? This is something we've heard about and probably talked about on the program, and we hear that in some cases it really works magic and can turn a veteran around from the PTSD that they might be suffering, the depression they might be suffering. This is another really kind of a niche charity that people might not often think about, but it has huge impact to the recipients of the charity.
Absolutely. I mean, every year there's hundreds of boats out there on the water, and what these guys have done, these men and women have done with Take a Vet, and the amount of effort that they've put into really impacting these soldiers and veterans coming home with as simple as a day of taking them out fishing, it's remarkable to see what it's done. And what Mark Ferns has done down in Brantford, Connecticut with that Jersey Mike's, you know, Mark's been open for 15 years. And his relationship with Take a Vet over the past 9, they're so deeply entrenched with each other, and it stretches way past March in terms of what Mark's providing them with food and donations, et cetera.
Great. Well, we've talked about how Jersey Mike's as a corporation and each of the individual store owners here in Connecticut are giving back. We've talked about how people can get involved. But there's also another element of giving back that I think it's really important to talk about before we bid you farewell for this morning, Chad. And that is the incentives and special deals that people might be able to enjoy just for following Jersey Mike's on Twitter or joining the Jersey Mike's email club. What's that about?
I'm a big fan of our loyalty and email program, so I appreciate you bringing that up, John. So we have on a store level, we have our loyalty program. So if you stop into a Jersey Mike's, I hope if you've been to a Jersey Mike's, you're a loyalty member already. But essentially every 12 subs, your 13th is free. We do it on a point system because people tend to grow their points and share them with lunch with a coworker, a neighbor, a family member. But other than that, we have our email club. If you go on to jerseymikes.com, you'll have the ability to sign up. You'll put in your zip code. It'll geographically link you to the closest store in terms of what coupons that store is sending out. And then on your birthday itself, you get a free sub. So it's a great way to get linked to the sub shop so that you can hear what deals we have going on and double points day and other coupons, et cetera.
Great. And following them on Twitter may show up with some sort of an incentive or coupon, particularly here during the month of giving in March. Chad Faulkner is on the line with us. We're going to send him along because it's almost lunchtime. He is area director in New England for Jersey Mike's, more than 1,500 Jersey Mike's locations across the country. And many here in Connecticut are joining forces with local charities, four of them here in Connecticut for the 9th annual month of giving fundraising campaign. All month long, you can donate increments at Jersey Mike's as you enjoy their great sandwiches. But on March 27th, you can do even more by bringing your family, your friends, and having breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Jersey Mike's, because that day, 100% of the proceeds are going to those charities right here in Connecticut. So, Chad Faulkner, thank you so much for the great work that you're doing. Thanks to Peter Cancro of the founder of the company for your great thought and philanthropy, and have a great month of giving. We appreciate you being on the show. Well, as you heard in the introduction, we're returning to the subject of the opioid epidemic, and something that we've been hearing from a lot of the experts and organization representatives that have been on the program over the past few years. One often overlooked aspect of the opioid epidemic is the connection to dental treatments. In fact, dentists and oral surgeons write about more than one out of every 10 of all opioid prescriptions, about 12% actually, including approximately 45% of opioid prescriptions for adolescents. And we're hearing a lot that this is often the first experience that young people have with opioids. So what should you do if you're prescribed an opioid, or your child is prescribed an opioid, your teen? What questions should you ask your dentist? Well, we're going to help you get that information. Joining us with the answers is Dr. Ted Wong. He's the chief dental officer at United Healthcare. Joining us from Southern California this morning online. Dr. Wong, thank you for taking some time to talk with us about this important subject.
Thanks for having me on your show, John.
So let's talk a little bit about the occasion that someone might be prescribed an opioid for dental care. We hear it's the stats that we just rattled off. More than one in 10 of these scripts is being written. Tell us a little bit about the situations that would call for opioids.
Yes. Yeah, as you mentioned, the statistics that the United Healthcare data indicated kind of gave us an opportunity to work with our healthcare dental professionals, and in terms of reducing the use of opioids, and the overall trends are improving. But I think more importantly, we needed to get our patients engaged. And as you mentioned, dentists write about 45% of opioid prescriptions for teenagers and young adults. And these are drugs like Vicodin and Percocet and codeine. And the simple explanation is that's when you're commonly going to have your wisdom teeth removed. They estimate about 5 million people a year, mainly teenagers and young adults, will have their wisdom teeth removed. And approximately 2/3 of those will receive an opioid prescription with that. And then the other two things to keep in mind with this population group, these teenagers and young adults is they're more susceptible to the addictive effects of opioids because their brains are still maturing. And then this is the age group where you're more likely to abuse or misuse opioids. And that's why working with you, working with shatterproof.org, we want to educate the patients, your audience, that they have a role in this, and there's a lot of great strategies they can employ to try and address this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ways is avoiding or not having the wisdom teeth or any teeth extracted. Obviously, a dentist's dream come true is a perfect dental formula without the need for extraction. But let's back up the subject and kind of broaden it out a little bit more and just explain to the folks that are listening this morning a little bit more about wisdom teeth. It's sort of like natural. Like when I was growing up, it was like you get to a certain age, you get your tonsils out, whether you like it or not. What is it about wisdom teeth and the prevalence of doing those extractions typically, I guess, or more typically when people are in those vulnerable teen years?
Well, it's around that time frame when, in many people, the wisdom teeth start erupting. Generally, we were getting to the point where, for most of us, there's just not enough room in our mouths for these third molars or wisdom teeth. So if they become symptomatic, meaning as they grow, as they start breaking the surface, you may end up with a gum infection or they may be causing some discomfort because they're putting pressure, you know, next to your teeth or just that crowding in general. So that's why for that age group, you're looking at potentially having your wisdom teeth out. Now, there's no, I guess, a clean answer or formula for when to get them out and if you should get them out. I think my recommendation is have that discussion with the dentist, the oral surgeon, and talk about the pros and cons about removing them current now or waiting a bit. Mm. There are complications if you do wait to have them removed. But everybody's different and every situation is different. So, you know, unfortunately, there's not one answer fitting all situations.
Sure. Good. I appreciate that clarification. So, in the cases when there are wisdom teeth removed or other extractions or other dental procedures that require or may demand the need for the level of pain medication to actually be opioids, what are some of the prescriptions that are being given out to the dental patients?
So the opioids most commonly used in dental procedures or dental treatment are going to be things like Vicodin, Percocet, and codeine. And if if somebody has gone in for a procedure that may end up with an opioid, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is the patient should ask questions. If you were going to go in, talk to your dentist, have a serious discussion about opioids. And the first question I would ask is, Do I really need an opioid prescription, or is there an alternative option for managing the pain? In many cases, I think over-the-counter medications like Tylenol and Motrin can be equally effective. And in fact, recent research has indicated that if you combine Tylenol with Motrin, then you're going to have a pain management as effective as opioids without the risk of addiction. Hmm. But if it turns out you do need an opioid, and there will be certain circumstances where an opioid is indicated, then ask about limiting the supply and the daily dosage, meaning the number of pills you get and the strength of the medication. We'd like to say go low and go slow when it comes to using opioids. In fact, the CDC recommends limiting opioid prescriptions to no more than 3 days. That's generally enough to manage most pain associated with dental procedures. And studies have shown that as you go beyond 3 days, your risk of addiction starts going up.
Mm-hmm. So can you, once again, kind of ratcheting out, just to help clarify questions that might be asked on the part of folks listening, how does that combination of Tylenol and Advil that over-the-counter combination, how does that actually physiologically work on the pain versus opioids? Does the opioid act differently from a chemical biological perspective than the over the counter, and it's just sort of two different roads to the same end?
Yeah, so I'm not the pharmacologist, so my understanding is there's different mechanisms by which these drugs work. And even Tylenol and Motrin work differently on your pain perception, the sensory perceptions. Mm. And by using them together, you're blocking in two different ways. Mm. So that makes them effective in combination.
Sure.
The benefit is that you just don't have that addictive effect that opioids give you. Opioids give you that feeling of euphoria, and that just sort of reinforces, hey, I want more of this. Mm. And we know that. Then that leads you down that road of the opioid use disorder or addiction.
Yeah, that added component of intoxication or some level of it is what ends up hooking the people, and then by the time I guess their resistance just starts to build, then it kind of has that ugly flip to where it becomes taking the opioids to not withdraw, right?
Right. You become dependent on it from a physiologic standpoint, and then that leads to the addictive behaviors, those actions people take to continue to use and get access to these drugs.
Very good. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about opioids in relation to dental care, and we've got an expert on the line with us. Dr. Ted Wong is the chief dental officer with United Healthcare, one of the many organizations that is engaged looking for alternatives and ways to help better serve and protect patients from opioid addiction. As we said earlier, dentists and oral surgeons write 12% of all opioid prescriptions, including approximately 45% of opioid prescriptions for adolescents. We're going to come back and chat a few more minutes with Dr. Wong right after this break. So stick with us, and we'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through LoveCT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to LoveCT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you're a part of a nonprofit or charity, you can find out how you can spend $5,000 worth of advertising and promotion time on one or more Connoisseur Media stations. All you need to do is visit the LoveCT page at this radio station's website. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. AARP is accepting applications right now for their 2019 Community Challenge Grant Program to fund quick action projects that spark change in local communities. The grant program, which is now in its third year, is part of AARP's nationwide Livable Communities Initiative, which aims to make communities great places to live for everyone. National 2018 winners were active in helping to revitalize alleyways, build dog parks, enliven underutilized public spaces, and improve unsafe intersections, to name a few. The Community Challenge is open to qualified nonprofits and government entities. Other types of organizations will be also considered on a case-by-case basis. But the application deadline is April 17th, and all projects must be completed by November 4th. Applications must be submitted through aarp.org/community challenge. You can also go to that website to learn more. That's aarp.org/community challenge. Well, we're back with Dr. Ted Wong. He's Chief Dental Officer with United Healthcare. So what should you do if you're prescribed an opioid? What questions should you ask your dentist? We're going to come back around to those subjects. Dr. Wong, should patients who are in the situation where they have a choice maybe talk to their dentist about a non-opioid alternative first, and then, in those few hours or day after wisdom tooth extraction or other significant dental procedure, if those over-the-counter options are not cutting it, then maybe call to get the prescription?
That's obviously one strategy somebody could take. I think, having that discussion with the dentist, sharing your personal, not desires, but what your opinion is on opioids. Maybe there's some situations at the house that, or in the home or personal conditions that you want to share will help shape that discussion and decision on whether to, one, use opioids or not. Or is it better to use an alternative? Or if it, like I said, if it's indicated you might need an opioid, then talk about how can I limit the supply? Do I really need, 3 days worth? Maybe for that procedure and your personal ability to manage pain or tolerate pain, maybe you only need a few pills or maybe just a day's worth. The opioids are good in sort of managing severe pain. But having treated patients before, if my patient is having severe pain for 3 days and continues to have pain, there's usually a complication associated with the procedure, like an infection or swelling in terms of wisdom teeth. It could be a dry socket. And just taking opioids isn't going to fix that. You need to go back and have the dentist or surgeon check you out and see what's going on. And maybe there's a second procedure or, some kind of treatment to manage the cause of the pain.
That's a very, very important point, and I appreciate you bringing that up. So you earlier talked about the over-the-counter alternative if opioids may not be needed. Are there other alternative therapies or medicines that are emerging or maybe coming from other parts of the world that are being looked at now in the United States because of this opioid epidemic that we're in the grips of? I would think that, scientists and medical professionals and dentists and oral surgeons would be eager to learn about and explore even other new alternatives to opioids.
I'm not aware of any research, or I mean, not research, but I'm not aware of any products or medications right now that can, that are, I guess, proven by research to control pain other than what we've talked about. But for dentistry, it's acute pain, so it's short duration type pain episodes. I know for chronic pain, like, orthopedic injuries or lower back pain, those types of conditions, people can turn to alternative therapies like acupuncture or biofeedback, meditation, massage therapy. So I think the health industry is looking at other ways of managing and dealing with pain other than using opioids for chronic conditions. When it comes to acute pain, like for dentistry, at this point, it's managing the procedure so you're not traumatizing the tissue, minimizing the trauma on the tissue, controlling the swelling, and the oral surgeons are highly trained in how to, as atraumatically as possible, remove teeth, and then controlling the post-surgical swelling and infections and discomfort. So I think those are the ways right now that are most effective, and we know that are proven to have value in managing the pain.
Very good. Well, probably the final thing we need to talk about is, the folks who do get two or three days or more of opioids prescribed to them, and they get to the end of the first day and they're able to switch to that over-the-counter alternative, or they're getting a little agita or gastric GI issues with the opioid, and they want to back off on that, and they're still left with some supply. There's a lot of I guess this is when the danger lurks, because then a lot of people, I guess, tend to just leave those last couple of pills or last few pills in their medicine cabinet, thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll need them at some point later. I'll just keep them around. But I guess the smart move is so that they are not accessed by the wrong people, or they don't create a longer situation where people can access them and then maybe become addicted. There's some important tips that you can provide for people to get rid of these pills.
That's a great point, and great question, John. The CDC estimates that 70% of misused opioids were obtained, stolen, or purchased from a friend or a relative. So we definitely need to handle, safely dispose of those unused pills, because, as you say, they become a source for misuse and abuse. But the thing to remember is, don't simply just throw these pills into the trash where they can be easily retrieved and then misused. Instead, you can return your unused opioid drugs to your pharmacy or to local law enforcement agencies. They will take back the unused pills. The DEA sponsors drug take-back programs twice a year. The pharmacy can provide these opioid disposal bags, which inactivate the ingredients in an opioid, and then you can throw those in the trash. Or you could simply take your unused pills, mix them with water and an unappealing substance such as kitty litter or coffee grinds, and then put that in a Ziploc and throw that in the trash. But definitely don't just toss them, you know, intact or in their original bottle into the trash, because that's potentially asking for problems.
Mm. Yeah, and your advice about putting them in a sealed Ziploc bag and mixed with some other substance and then putting them in the trash is a smart move. I know here in Connecticut, we've had a couple of guests on the program who have expressed concern about the higher concentrations of the chemicals in some of these pills showing up in the environment. So flushing them down the toilet is no longer a preferred alternative either.
Right. I'm not an environmental expert, mm-hmm. but definitely I think there are better ways of disposing of these unused pills that don't have that environmental impact.
Excellent. Well, is there somewhere that you can advise our listeners to go if they want some more information specifically about opioids in relation to dental procedures?
United Healthcare has a lot of great resources on this topic. They can go to newsroom.uhc.com and click on the opioids tab, and your listeners can find a lot of great information on this very important topic.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us here this morning. Dr. Ted Wong is Chief Dental Officer with United Healthcare on the line with us, giving us a great deal of important information in relation to opioids when prescribed for dental procedures, particularly when they're prescribed to adolescents. So, Dr. Wong, it was great to chat with you, and thank you so much for taking the time to educate us about this important subject this morning. Well, it's getting to the point where every time I pick up the phone and hear the familiar voice, I know right away it's Ginger Katz, and so pleased to still be a great resource and acquaintance, not only to me, but to all of us here listening to the award-winning For the People now for these so many years. This organization born out of the tragedy of the loss of a child, and that is making not just local, not just statewide, not even national, but let's talk about approaching global impact with the great work that you're doing, Ginger. Certainly, your books and your programs are being looked at not just here, but literally around the world as a potential curriculum. Although we'll kind of ratchet it back and talk more about local, state, national issues that you're involved with. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much, John. I'm happy to be back.
So you have told your story on the program so many times and turned it into a book, a teaching tool for parents and educators to use with young children. So we won't delve too much into the backstory. It'll kind of get teased out in our conversation, but suffice to say, the last time you and I sat down and chatted was on the while you were poised to deliver your second ever parenting through the opioid crisis and this courageous parenting 101 session about a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about how you were excited to be able to try to expand that program. And here we are just about a year later getting recognition from experts in Washington, D.C. and the funding to really kind of expand this program across the state. Let's talk about Courageous Parenting 101 and the courage to speak.
Sure, John. Thank you. Courageous Parenting 101, a parenting through the opioid crisis and beyond, came about from a grant from the federal government when we talked the second rollout in mm-hmm. Danbury. And Connecticut received, the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services received a $5.2 million grant because of the opiate crisis that's affecting our society, our nation. Mm-hmm. And just to give you a comparison, Massachusetts received $42 million that year. So, and it was for a period of 2 years. And I was charged, well, the reason why I bring that up, because there's a big discrepancy. I mean, they're a bigger state, and I suppose this year, there's a new grant coming down, and we're getting $22 million because of the opiate crisis. So this went into all prevention and treatment organizations in Connecticut, and I was selected to do a parenting component. And we had in place, because I knew 23 years ago this was going to happen to other families, and we decided to do education towards parents, not only children. And so I was primed for the taking because I had a 5-session Courageous Parenting 101 already built in with over 140 facilitators teaching it. And when DEMA saw my track record, they said, Ginger, can you make this where it's a one session, one night, one session instead of four? Because we realize now parents are very busy and they won't come out for 4 sessions. Well, they did when I rolled it out. I don't know, but anyway, they wanted to condense it, which is fine with me, down to a 1-session program, but make sure that I share Ian's story up front because it's the heart of what we do. And if parents look at me, they're parents too, so I'm a peer. They can relate to a peer. And if this could happen to me, it can happen to anybody. So they wanted me to share Ian's story up front and then take the 4-to-5-session program that we originally developed with a team of experts and school systems, and tailor it to a 1-session program, one night, one session with my presentation, and run the opiate information, the most up-to-date opiate information and parenting techniques. And that we did. So we were selected to roll out about, I think we rolled out about 25 already since I spoke to you and in its entirety. And this year I have a funding to develop it online, and it's going to take about a year and a half to do that, put that together on my website and everything, about mm-hmm. a year, and also deliver 5 more. And we have 5 more booked already. And Courageous Parenting 101 is about the opiate epidemic and how it happened, but most important, how to help parents navigate through the problems with With all drugs, especially the younger children when they are exposed to tobacco, a sip of beer, vaping, and marijuana. Because that's what happened to my son. Most kids start with that.
Yeah. So did I hear correctly that you do still have room on the roster to bring more communities on? Oh, great.
I have funding for 12 more. But, you know, if you just call me, we can do it anyway. So let's... You know, any community can call me and see how this is a fit. You know, this is what I do. I do a lot of programming, and this is what I've always done. I did it before I was asked to do it for the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and before I got this funding, I used to scrounge around for asking and begging for funding just to roll it out. You know, we have to have computers, we have to pass flyers, we have to have handouts, so on and so forth. So, you know, we are a nonprofit, and I have to put the lights on. So, of course, but when we got the funding from Demas, this really expanded our reach. Just to give you an idea, on March 12th, we're in St. Joe's in Trumbull. On March 18th, we're at the Greenwich YMCA. March 27th, Old Saybrook High School. And I'm speaking to the kids during the day and the parents at night. Wow. March 29th in Hartford at the Glory Chapel International Cathedral. And May 5th in Stamford for the Connecticut Alliance for Foster and Adaptive Parents. And I have plenty room. I have funding for 12 more. But as I said, this is what we do. So there isn't a limit to how many we can roll out that's physically and emotionally possible.
Great. So if anyone is listening who is an educator, a community leader, part of a scout troop or a community organization, ad hoc or appointed or official, don't worry that you didn't make the cut on the 12 remaining opportunities that Ginger has left, because she will bring the parenting through the opioid crisis and beyond and her courageous parenting 101 workshops to your community if you need it. If you want to learn more about the incredible work that Ginger has been doing along with her family, her husband, you can go to couragetospeak.org and begin to explore all of the various information and opportunity. So much of it now through your long tenure at this effort, Ginger, you know, vetted and analyzed by a lot of organizations and experts and institutions, the least of which is not Yale University, right?
Yes, yes. Well, we created Courageous Parenting 101 about 10 years ago, and we wanted to make sure we were going down the right path with science-based information. So we got a grant from the federal government to expand our capacity and also to evaluate our program, and Yale School of Medicine was the evaluator along with another researcher, and we had a 3-year rigorous evaluation of the programs, and the outcomes were spectacular, and I have to say that, and I can give anybody a handout if they want of the outcomes. And then when we trimmed it down to just one session, but we still have the 5 sessions if anybody wants it. Mm-hmm. But when we trimmed it down, the outcomes have been phenomenal. So you have to keep a track record of, you know, the changes parents have when they, before they walk in the door and when they leave your door. We need to know a barometer of how we're doing, and we do that at every presentation and every rollout of Courageous Parenting 101.
And I imagine
make sure we're on the right track.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I speak to you a year from now and the online version is hopefully in place and rolling out, or at least testing, you'll have the tools to get instantaneous data and feedback on the program and its effectiveness, as well as a means to continue to track the success that parents who take the course are doing, better than sending out a card or a flyer or trying to reach them by email. It'll be an instantaneous and interactive tool for them to go back to. So this is fantastic. But we don't want to leave you this morning without also reminding people about the other reason that you're here. And that is something you've literally talked about for the past 14 years since its inception here on For the People. And we're just so proud and pleased to partner with you in inviting anyone listening to either come or tell someone about and make them come to the 15th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to Be Drug-Free Family Night. And that's coming up in less than a month on Tuesday, April 9th. So tell us a little bit about how the Drug-Free Family Night is this kind of once a year program that is so much different than some of the other things that you're doing, but still has such a huge effect on those who attend and participate.
Well, it started by accident. It wasn't really a big event. It was just the results of when I go in and share my son's story, Ian's story. We lost him, 23 years ago, and Norwalk School System helped us develop the curriculum and always supported my work when I first started talking out and speaking out. So I would present Ian's story, and that's the heart of what we do. And then we developed the curriculum, and we wanted to show, one night, we wanted to show the parents what the kids are doing in the classroom as a result of the hearing Ian's story and reading Sonny's story, which is the book that I wrote.
Yes.
From the perspective of the dog Sonny.
The pet dog's eye view.
Yeah. And, we just wanted to have some parents come out and have some kids speak out at the podium and what they got out of the program, and they started to write reflections, and some of them were letters like Dear Mrs. Katz, and some were this is their my opinion about what happened, and they were astonishing writings. And they did artwork as well, and they were so clever about their drug prevention message when they tailored it to a piece of art. And I was so proud of these kids, and I said to one of the principals, I said, why don't we invite the parents to hear this and see this and have some kids speak? Well, they took the mic, and they shared, and parents had videos there, their cameras there, and people, and they flocked in, and it was in a cafeteria, and it was a huge cafeteria, and people were waiting, parents were waiting, they couldn't even get into the cafeteria, so many people showed up, and accidentally, on purpose maybe, we stumbled into this event, and that was considered the first one. So we did this over 15 years, and it really evolved. And every school in Norwalk, in the middle school, we have four middle schools, rotate each year and have this event. And it's based on the curriculum that's taught in the classrooms by the health class teacher and the Courage to Speak curriculum, drug prevention education curriculum taught by health class teachers, and it's the result of sharing Ian's story and moving the children. See, when you give a child something in their heart, and then you connect it to the intellect, you have them, and then they start to learn, and they're very receptive to hearing Ian's story and what happened to him. Many children, before they heard my presentation, didn't think it could happen to them. They couldn't believe Ian died because he smoked a little pot and cigarettes and did some alcohol. And then Ian's journey through his school years, it just escalated, and his life just ended up in such a tragedy because he got addicted so quickly, because that's what happens to children. They think it's okay to use, and they might misconceive messages that society is putting in place and saying it's okay to do this or that, and they make a mistake, and their brains are still developing, and they're so naive, they make mistakes. But if they continue down that path, they're going to get addicted, and then they're going to have a lifelong, tragedy, possibly.
Yeah, hopefully not, but still a burden, not just on themselves personally, health-wise, but the ripple effects of that burden on coworkers, employers, loved ones, their community, and it's just so great to see how this event has grown to expose so many people, where so much of the other work you do is working on the cause and possible mitigation. This puts the young people who you're most targeting out in front of their peers, their parents, and their educators to really dig into what's going on in their minds and to give us all quite a lot of hope that things are going to get better with this opioid crisis and with the education and understanding and appreciation. So time is fleeting, but we need to make sure people write down Tuesday, April 9th. There's a dinner that is part of this event that begins at 5:30 and the program at 6:30. It's happening at the Ponus Ridge Middle School on Hunter's Lane in Norwalk. And if you want more information or to get information on anything that Ginger and her organization is doing, we would ask you to go to courage2speak.org, whether it is part of bringing Courageous Parenting 101 to your community. As Ginger said, there are many opportunities to do that this year. Do get in touch and consider coming out to this great dinner and event, the 15th Annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night, once again, April 9th, down in Norwalk. So, Ginger, once again, spectacular to talk to you. Wonderful to hear how all the work that you're doing is making such a difference and touching so many more people. It's like every time I talk to you, it seems like the influence that and the passion that you bring out of the tragedy of losing your son is growing exponentially and doubling and tripling. So Godspeed to you. Great work. And we'll hopefully be talking to you again soon to hear about other new and exciting developments with your Courage to Speak Foundation. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, John, for inviting me.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.